Caesar.
We're just,
Okay, we're going to call our meeting back to order, and thank you for allowing us a break. And just for the gallery's information, in my hand here I hold 50 names, plus some I see that maybe just came in. Again, I'll reiterate the point that sharing new information is important. Going over information we've already heard about, we would appreciate you forego that. And anybody who just wants to register themselves in opposition, that works fine too. Otherwise, we could be here till 2. The next three up are Janet Nixdorf, Louise Hembroff, Sonia Strauss, Verna Hare. Just in opposition for Sonia, okay. So Janet Nixdorf is not here. Thank you, okay. We'll register you in opposition. Louise Hembroff, seeing not here. Next three would be Verna Hare, if you'd like to speak. Deanne Coombs, Neil Candecci. Any of you folks here? Oh, there she is. Okay, come on down. Deanne wishes to, in opposition. Okay. Verna, are you ready? Please step forward to the mic, and I'll just say a couple of other names. Kathy Salmonson, Wendy Josephson, Charles and Anne Goyette. Those are some other names. Okay, if you want to speak, come on down. All right, Verna Hare, 5 minutes.
Walk anytime you wish, alone or not, and be greeted by a symphony of nature. In spring, a chorus of frog song, no sound system required. And birds, as they proclaim, spring is here. While other birds build nests and fly overhead. Look to the side and see deer warily eyeing you through the trees. Small rabbit bounds across the trail. In summer, add the profusion of wild flowers, grasses to the mix, flavor it with berries as you walk along a trail. In fall, a kaleidoscope of colors. Colorful leaves adorns your path. In winter, the hush of snow falling gently as you walk, ski or snowshoe. This is Charleswood. Every day, no admission charge to experience it. My children grew up in Charleswood. This was their playground, as it was for hundreds of others. It provided countless hours of fun and an unrivaled education. It is all there, math, LA, science, poetry, music, phys ed, and lots of unstructured play. There was no need for play structures or equipment. Now they bring their friends from other parts of Winnipeg and from foreign lands to experience this treasure. I spend many happy hours snowshoeing here in winter. Others walk, run, or bike, etc. I speak of Area 7 in Ridgewood South, and my concern is the loss over natural habitat, habitat that is irreplaceable. In the wetland, the pond right beside Hart Trail, grassland and the forest of oak trees, some well over 100 years old, are all part of this well-functioning ecosystem. It is unique in that all three are found in such a small area. This was identified in a study by Native Plant Solutions as an area of rich biodiversity with the greatest variety at the interface between the habitats. As the present plan shows, this will be destroyed and replaced by a collector road that will leave us with a view of cars, noise, and the smell of spent fuel. How can we accept this, especially in our centennial year? No retention ponds, even with naturalized sides, will ever replace the treasure we have now. To my knowledge, no public consultation has ever taken place for Area 7. We who live here pay taxes. We deserve input into the responsible development of our community. This is our home. It's my home. I implore you to not accept this plan as it is at present. Please revisit this and come up with a plan to allow the natural wetland, grassland, and forest to remain intact. No one does nature better than nature. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Next up.
I have my notes printed out for anyone who wants to take them home and study them tonight.
Sure. We got lots of paper. Is it Kathy? Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
I'll pull the mic down because I'm a little short. Okay. Hi, I'm Kathy Solmanson. I've been a resident in Charleswood for 21 years, and I've raised my family there. I can be very long-winded, but in the interest of brevity, I have, look at the alarm on your face, I'll put four key points. First area is addressing natural areas, and the second is traffic and infrastructure. I live in Charleswood, and I walk on the Hart Trail for an hour several times a week. There are many gravel trails in Manitoba. What makes the Hart Trail special? It is the sounds and the views along the trail. In some sections of the trail, the chorus of the frog song is so loud that you can barely maintain a conversation. We have five species of frogs in the area, including the northern leopard frog, which is on the SARS list, species at risk. We also have over 60 species of birds, including the bobolink. If this trail is only widened a certain... Move on. I'm requesting that the city listen to the concerns of the residents and take a proactive stance. I want the city to protect the natural areas and habitats in writing in the precinct plan. And I do not mean small squares of manicured lawn with swing sets. Regarding traffic and infrastructure, I also moved to Charleswood because of the country feel and the large lots. Cramming 8,000 more homes into the area on tiny lots will create traffic hazards for all residents on streets that are already in serious disrepair. I, for one, cannot understand why the city is willing to approve further development when they are unable to finance the existing road repairs that are required. I would like to see, again in writing, a commitment from the city to address the traffic issues by upgrading roads in the area, widening Wilkes to two lanes with turning lanes for access to the development, and extending the William Clement Parkway to Wilkes. And I mean to have these structures done prior to the development, not 10 to 15 years after the area is built. Finally, I'm going to add one ad lib, a closing comment. When you asked who supported the development, I was dismayed to hear many names of individuals who not only do not reside in Charleswood, but they are in fact on the development team, and they will benefit financially from this development. I find that that's not acceptable and not fair. Thank you very much. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Kathy.
I'm good.
Folks, okay, we'll add Tracy Reimer, Vanda Argento, Darlene and Terry Boucher, Victoria Marshall. Any of those folks want to come down? Wendy Josephson, thanks.
Yes, I am Wendy Josephson. I am a resident of Charleswood, and although I appreciate Qualico's efforts, I am opposed to some unclear areas of the plan. The new communities that is referenced in the plan is the definition taken from the R. Winnipeg document to provide the guidelines for the development of the sub-areas. This assumes that the sub-areas are distinct from the areas adjacent and therefore not subject to the same design constraints in terms of lot size, setbacks, and appearance. The minimum lot size for R1-M, for example, is 25 feet, which is not compatible with the Charleswood area. Direction 1 of the new communities requires the planning department to support new development that is adjacent to and compatible with existing development. Specifically, there is no land use policy for undeveloped land south of the Hart Trail, where new residential lots directly adjacent to existing lots should, and it actually should be shall, generally reflect the pattern of development in adjacent areas. These sub-areas may be undeveloped, but they are still part of the community of Charleswood as it exists today, and which I don't wish to see changed in character. Existing communities occupy, in some cases, more than a third of the area to be developed. Allowing these areas to be defined as new communities gives the planners the right to vary the basic character of the new development drastically from what the area residents have become accustomed to. Not acceptable. And my other point that I would like to make is the process. This is the largest precinct plan to be developed in the city of Winnipeg. As a member of the public and a resident of Charleswood, I attended the various community meetings held by the developer. I also joined various groups to learn more about how the planning process works. The more I learned, the more complex the issues became, especially in an area of this size. I read the draft precinct plan, our Winnipeg plan, complete communities, natural areas assessment, transportation master plan, ecologically significant land strategies, etc., etc. Finally, I was allowed to see the city's response to the precinct plan just 4 days prior to this ACC meeting. I find that is unacceptable. This is not enough time to formulate a coherent, informed response to the precinct plan. This community committee meeting does not allow enough time to discuss the issues stemming from a plan of this magnitude. Thank you.
No, thank you. Next up, okay, ma'am, before you introduce yourself, Charles and Ann Goyette? No. Tracy Reimer?
She had to leave.
Okay. And I'll bet you you're Vanda. No?
No.
Opposition, okay. Darlene?
Darlene.
You're Darlene.
Okay, Darlene
just, before we go, I'll just get some more people in the queue here. Victoria McDonald, Alan Roberts, Wesley Chamberlain, and Harold Schuster.
Tell us you want to speak or if you want to speak.
Yeah. If you want to speak, please come down. Please proceed.
Okay. My name is Darlene Boacher, and I live on Buckingham. My husband and I also own 2 acres of land that fronts onto Community Row and is developable. It's in Area 4 of the precinct. And I'm also the daughter of a developer. And I'm going to speak about my dissatisfaction with the process. Qualico and Landmark have been excellent to work with. They invite us to meetings. They answer questions. They respond to public input. We can see how the design of the project has been changed because of the public input. And all through the process, they have let us know what they're trying to do and why. The developer has been proactive. But the city... Did you have a question? I'm sorry. The city appears to leave everything up to the developer, and I don't want them to do that. I want my city to host public meetings. I want them to host or at least attend consultation meetings. I want my city to plan the roads in the development, not the developer. And when the city makes changes to a plan, I want to know why. The developer posted their plans well in advance of this meeting. Qualico had held public consultation about Area 1 months ago, but the city's response to the sub-area development plans was posted on Friday, 4 days before the meeting, and we've just heard today that there were changes made that most of the stakeholders were unaware of, and the city has also proposed some development changes, or some changes to the development plan that it does not give reasons for, at least until you phone the city employees. And I do want to say that James and Donna and Rodney have been excellent if you phoned and asked them questions. They get back to you with full and complete answers. But I don't want to have to go digging for answers. I want the city to be upfront and not bury this information. One of my concerns is a lack of commitment to green space, and I know others are going to talk about this, but I just want to say that there are over 20 groups in Winnipeg, including groups like Save Our Sane, Trees Winnipeg, Friends of Various Places, Hart Trail, Bruce Park, Sturgeon Creek, over 20 groups in the city that have taken on an environmental stewardship role, all of whom have been lobbying for saving green space. And I think somehow we need to find a way to come up with a little bit more of the natural area being saved. So what do I want the city to do? I want them, first of all, to make use of various means open to them to make residents aware of upcoming developments. At a parent council meeting a couple of weeks ago, one person was speaking about the development, and half the people at the parent council meeting were unaware. I don't know how you do that. I mean, I know CCHP went door to door, the developer posted things, but I did think that the city has access to putting notices in water bills, and they also have sign up for email that, much like the Know Your Zone, you can know when you're being plowed. Maybe you can know when something new is happening in your community. I'd like the city to provide residents with their critical analysis of a proposed development at least 2 weeks prior to the vote on the development. And I don't think that there should be a vote on sub-areas on the same day as the vote of a precinct plan. And the language in the precinct plan should be strengthened so that natural areas are developed. Are there any questions?
Seeing none, no. Thank you very much,
Thank you.
Darlene. Okay. Victoria McDonald. It's okay, Lorraine, just take your time.
McDonald, and I'm the chair for Citizens for Charleswood Habitat Preservation, also known as CCHP. I just wanted to start by saying that I really am disappointed about the last-minute changes that were presented not only to the councillors, but to the rest of the audience here at the last minute. And I'm also dismayed to know that information was relayed to other stakeholders and the planners a week before, as I understand it. I may be mistaken. We've all worked very hard over time to prepare for this meeting. And to have changes made at the last minute, I find extremely disrespectful to people who have put time and energy into the plan. Anyway, CCHP is a community group that was formed in September 2011 after the announcement of the Ridgewood South Precinct Plan in April of 2011. We're a community group that is not anti-development. Certainly our main goal is to influence the development plan and have some input on how it ends up. We were in contact with 300-plus people within Charleswood and have had several meetings to relay information back and forth. I'm going to be speaking to you tonight about the natural area policies of the precinct plan. I want to say that they're generally good, but there are some critical issues in the policies, the natural area policies, that I think need to be addressed before the plan is approved. I did give you a takeaway page there, just one pager, very simple. I first wanted to talk about the public consultation process. It was quite extensive, as Donovan Taves said. We found that most helpful. By and large, I'm saying the same things as Donovan actually, is that there were three important issues that were takeaways from that. As he said, it was not scientific, but it was Hart Trail, parks and open spaces, traffic. The CCHP consultation with Landmark Planning and Design was great. We found Landmark Planning and Design approachable, available, and accessible. Consultation was evident when we looked at the precinct plan. Things that we said were reflected in the plan, and we were pleased to see that. Not everything, but lots of stuff. We also also had concerns about the natural area assessment that the city conducted because we felt there were gaps in the information and that would compromise the planning process specific to natural areas. Qualico stepped up to the plate, acknowledged our concerns, likely because they were valid in terms of filling in the gaps from an evidence perspective, and hired Native Plant Solutions to conduct studies, as this previously been said, and two important documents stemmed from that, and as from a go-forward position will be used as important reference documents when planning for natural areas. In terms of the precinct plan vision, I see that the precinct plan is as sort of a setup for goals and vision. Those are the softer types of areas that probably speak to the feelings and emotions and ideas expressed by Charleswood residents. And then there's the actual policy piece that's the teeth that help enable the vision and the goals. So the concepts, I've distilled it. Basically, what we sort of took away is that it's built around a trail system, connects neighborhoods and community assets, experience the outdoors and urban setting, and urban wildlife benefit from natural areas. And I think this is pretty much a takeaway from what people are thinking and feeling. What does the plan actually promote? Well, it promotes all kinds of things, and lots has to do. There's lots of talk about natural areas. And I think that's speaking to the information that they're receiving from Charleswood residents. Parks, public spaces are valued. There's a sense of community pride. We've already heard people speak to how important the natural areas are in Charleswood. The actual precinct goals include one, which actually says preserving natural areas. But at the end of the day, we need to look at the policies to see if they actually do support the natural area visions and goals. I'm just speaking to the natural area policies, I'll have you know. That's the true test. So when we look at the park policies introduction, there's a purpose there, and it's a segue into the policy piece. And it says to dedicate parkland and preserve natural areas. Now, these are strong words, right? To meet recreational needs, active and passive. So now it goes into the key features, which are linear park and trail system, enhanced connectivity, and additional small park spaces for playground purposes, and one large active park site, which is all very good. And we support that, and we want those things. But the key features, natural areas, is not listed under the key features. Subtle, but important. Sorry, you know. When referencing the natural areas in the introduction, there are things said as well about using studies to identify natural areas, as we said before, the NAA and NPS. Diversity is noted, nothing unique. No threatened or endangered species under the Species at Risk Act. Also, very telling is the Charter dedicates 10% of the public reserve, and this is in relation to the natural area piece of it. You don't see this sort of cap when we're talking about parks or the green or the trails piece. And if we want to preserve additional lands, well, we have to use other tools. In terms of the actual policies, some of them are shall, and that we see that some of the things that we've been saying to landmark planning and design are actually being reflected. So the park system shall add green space adjacent to the Hart Trail. We've already talked about that. And shall preserve and enhance the existing natural area. In terms of the policies for greenway networks, subdivisions shall include a greenway network and shall implement the trail plan. Now, those two last pieces are very, very strong in terms of the shall. The thing about the general park policy is shall add green space adjacent to the Hart Trail. That's presuming natural areas exist to make adjacent to the Hart Trail. In terms of active and passive parks, also very strong proactive language. It talks about the small passive parks for playground purposes in sub-areas, five of them, each from 0.5 to 1 acre, very, very specific. Sub-area 3 and 4 shall have 2 to 3 acre active parks with a combined option even of 4 to 5. I'm not disagreeing with any of this, but it's very specific and the plan guarantees it's in it. In terms of the natural area reference, it does say, and I understand why this is in, it says efforts shall be made to preserve. So I'm using emphasis on the words. So it's not efforts shall be made, it's efforts shall be made to preserve natural areas. I paraphrase this. With the size and extent shall be acceptable to the city. Now the problem with this is they're not very measurable. Efforts aren't very measurable. Efforts are subjective, and they're linked to human behavior and people. And people are influenced by various factors. Passion, as we've seen tonight. Authority within the city, and some people having more authority or more pull than others in terms of pushing their own agendas. We also have competing interests within the city. So if all of these things affect the ability of people to preserve natural areas, and the city is the primary driver of that. And, of course, if additional natural areas are preserved, it must be done through other methods. And then, of course, we have that caveat, the parkland dedication policies, just to remind us that there is no wiggle room under the development agreement parameters. It's 8-2. Although it does mention they were able to apply some public reserve to other areas, which I think is beneficial. So in terms of the natural area policies, actually, the policies, and there's lots of them, they've done a really careful job of drafting them, I believe. Can't cover them tonight. They're really good if there are natural areas to preserve. That's the key piece of all of this. The actual natural area policies are reflect the recommendations by the natural area assessment, by NPS, but they're useless if there's no natural area to apply them to. And that's the key. So in contrast, the policies guarantee active parks and trails. And as Donovan has said, trails are an emerging feature in new communities, and they are wonderful. I expect if there's trails in Ridgewood South, I'll use them. However, trails consume public reserve at the expense of natural areas simply because the green trails and the parks are already guaranteed, and we have a finite piece of public reserve to use. So in essence, natural areas are not secured in the policies that we see today. But who's responsible for that? Is it landmark planning design? Is it Qualico? Not really. The city takes the leadership role in securing natural areas, and that's who we're looking to. So what do we do? So I think, and I know we've discussed this before, I think we need a detailed natural area blueprint, not to guarantee what must be obtained, but help guide what must be obtained. We have one for roads. We have one for trails. Why not have one for the natural area blueprint? We have all the information we need to identify those areas, and actually we have, and I know the city's worked towards that as well. A natural area blueprint provides framework and goals to help us move forward, and it withstands the test of time, and in the event in 10 to 20 years at full build-out, I expect to see a different group of people sitting here, and I won't be here likely either. Well, maybe. Also, it allows the sub-area plans to incorporate features of that blueprint, and so they know what they're working with. It's the same as with roads or with trails. They know that. Why not the natural areas that are of importance to save? And it increases accountability. So I'd like to see a blueprint appended to the plan. The other thing is that I want to make sure that the parks planner and the naturalist have some flexibility in terms of what they would like to be saved. So we want 10% public reserved used for the entire precinct. So we don't want to divvy it up into the sub-areas saying 10% in one, 10% in two. We want to give the parks people flexibility to determine where they should go. And that's also mentioned actually in the plan. Creates goals and targets, yes. And we also want to ensure that the money given to the city in lieu of public reserve for the natural areas is actually reinvested in the natural areas. And I encourage to create a fund specific to that. So I know that I'm not totally familiar with all those financial pieces of it, but I think that it would be very beneficial if we could work collaboratively to have the money that's submitted in lieu of natural areas create a special fund that is only used to obtain future natural areas in the Ridgewood precinct. The other thing is I'd like to see is the city to partner with us and the community to help fundraise. We are more than happy to start that process, similar to other groups, Save Our Seine, and sort of go through the test of time. So those are some of the things I think that we can do to help ensure that the natural area that so many people are concerned about are actually secured in the plan. So as it is now, until that's addressed, I am opposed. That's not to say that there aren't many good features of that plan, but some of the things that we want to address can't be addressed by Landmark Planning Design, nor Qualico, or any of the developers. The greatest influence here are the city. So thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. I think Councillor Havick has some questions.
Yes. Thank you very much for coming, Victoria. And I appreciate your passion and rallying people and lots of good ideas. I just want to ask you a few questions about whether or not you feel that you've influenced the direction of the plan that's before us from what could have been before us.
I think we have. I think we've had. We've had lots and lots of meetings with Landmark Planning Design. I think that we've the natural area policies that we see have incorporated a lot of our ideas, and we're really thankful for that, and we're pleased with that. There are other, that has been one of our major focuses as well, and Al Roberts will also be speaking to the traffic issues, which is another Charleswood, but I do believe we've had an influence there.
These ideas with the developer then that you're recommending for us to consider?
Well, we have talked about a natural area blueprint plan with not only Donovan but also with the city, and but some of the things we've recommended here has just come out recently just from interactions and questions that we've had with various people. So making sure that 10% public reserve is not dedicated or assessed specific to the sub-areas, but it's assessed overall, so it gives the park strategic planner and Rodney some ability to be flexible in securing higher quality areas. And we brainstormed as a group, and some of it's been, you know what, it's the 11th hour and we've done some extra homework, so.
It does seem to me that a lot has come forward in the 11th hour. Just one more thing. You gave us a handout with three slides. Do you have this whole presentation that you could email to us?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
So.
Anything further? No. None. Thank you, Victoria, and we'll call on Alan. This is a tag team, I guess. Speaking at some point, possibly, Rick Wend, John and Marina Robson, Brian Smith.
All those here.
Brian Smith, you're opposed? Who is the John? Opposed? Okay, thank you. Ken Howell? Okay, whenever you're ready there, my friend. Alan?
I have assembled the essence of my presentation in a two-page summary, which I've given to the clerk for your future reference. And with regard to the green space, I do have a couple of slides that I would like to relate to in that regard, but towards the end of my presentation, if that's all right, because it ties in actually really quite well with Victoria's. But anyway, I'll go through them in the order that I've got them here, and we'll reach them fairly quickly. 5 minutes for something that we've been working on since June of 2011 is hardly fair, but I'll do my best.
We're being flexible on that because people are standing down, so we're going to give you some of their time, but we still have 30-odd on here. So.
Certainly. I've raised my family in Charleswood. We've lived in Charleswood for 33 years now, and expect I'm trying to retire there. But that's not always that easy to do. And the location of this development is immediately across the street from me. I live on Glenbush, which is right on the immediate north side of the Hart Trail. In a similar vein to Victoria, my concerns relate more to what is not in the precinct plan as compared to what is in the precinct plan. And it's really areas of responsibility that are not the developers, they are the city's areas of responsibility. And we've had no indication that our concerns will be dealt with adequately or at all by the city. And so I'm hoping that will change tonight. The first and most significant from our residents' standpoint in terms of the feedback that I've received is the impact on the existing infrastructure. And that comes in two forms, only one of which I can deal with tonight. One which I cannot is the strength of our roads, which are essentially scraped up topsoil. They're not roads that have been built with a proper cross-section. In other words, they can't stand the weight of trucks, particularly the heavy garbage trucks that we use in our area now, buses, that kind of thing. So essentially, particularly those areas that you see daily traffic by heavy loads, heavy wheel axle loads, really need to be reinforced. In addition to the reinforcement is the amount of traffic that they can handle, and that relates directly to their width and the ability of people to walk along that street. The streets are expected to see a very substantial increase in traffic, and I've picked the most serious areas here that experience increases in traffic as a result of the precinct, not as a result of anything internal within the existing Charleswood, but because of the precinct, we're seeing increases between 35 and 75, 80% over and above our current traffic volumes. And I'm speaking specifically about Rannoch and that portion of Rannoch between Community Road and Charleswood Road. It's already a fairly dangerous place if you've driven your high school children to high school or make them walk if they have to walk on Rannoch. They're sharing often one lane with traffic, two-lane traffic. And to do that without a sidewalk, it's a dangerous thing. And to increase that traffic volume just makes it that much worse. So I'm saying that Rannoch between Community Road and Charleswood Road needs to be widened and have a sidewalk put on. The only way to widen it is to put a storm sewer underneath it. It's not because the storm sewer does them any good. It's because they need something to take the place of the ditch when you make the road wider. So in terms of benefit, and that's what I'll get to next after I'm finished with this slide, the benefit really is only in the sidewalk. The other areas that need to be looked at for early upgrading are Hearthstone between Rannoch and Roblin Boulevard, where the traffic volume goes up about 60%, as I recall. The next area is Dieppe, which is, well, it's been a chronic problem already, and it's expected to see an increase of approximately 75% in traffic volume. That's too much. It's dangerous. It's dangerous already, and you're just going to make it even more so by creating that precinct or allowing the precinct development to occur. They need drop-off lanes, and I'm thinking at least one and preferably two drop-off lanes so that cars that are there to drop off their children are able to do so without interfering with the traffic that is, trying to get by. Now, maybe that's a divided a road there to just adjacent to the school. Maybe it's turning that into a one-way street, or maybe it's a part-time one-way street. I don't know what the answer is, but it needs to be dealt with, and it needs to be dealt with by some capital expenditure. Down the road a little ways, after the parkway gets installed, I would expect, and especially if it's allowed to intersect with Wilkes Avenue, it will be seeing considerable traffic and the traffic from the rest of Charleswood south of Eldridge will come up to Eldridge, along Eldridge, and take the parkway down onto the Wilkes Avenue to join onto Wilkes Avenue. The estimates that I've seen from or heard from the traffic planners is that probably 50% of the traffic that gets onto the parkway, if it connects onto Wilkes, will go south onto Wilkes and not go north onto Roblin, or Grant Avenue, rather, or up to Roblin. So it will see a significant amount of traffic. It may even attract enough to permit closure of Elmhurst, which apparently has already been decided, which I was flabbergasted at. But nonetheless, it's a step forward. I don't debate that.
Go off the slide. Where did you get those numbers from on the current loads and the predictions?
From the studies undertaken by the city's Public Works, from Stantec study and the MMM study.
Okay.
These numbers are all available right on the website, the precinct plan website. Street upgrading is, as I mentioned, Rannoch, Hearthstone, and Dieppe, and eventually Eldridge. Hopefully we get to Eldridge. Hopefully it's we're able to afford the construction of the parkway through to Wilkes while I'm still able to drive. The cost is one big issue, a major issue for the people in Charleswood, and it will be, I'm told, and I'm told by ACC, we made a presentation regarding this in December. We heard at the end of March that it was going to be, had to be carried out as a local improvement. The only problem is twofold, or the problems are twofold. One is that a local improvement has to be approved by the local populace. Try it. I don't think you'll get very far. Secondly, it has to be paid for, or is expected to be paid for, by those who benefit. And that's right in within the City of Winnipeg Charter Act. It has to be paid for by the people who benefit. Now, the people who are benefiting in this case are not the local residents. They are the people of the precinct and the City of Winnipeg. So we expect them to at least pay for the street widening and the storm sewer replacement for the ditch in those areas requiring upgrading. I think our residents would recognize the value of the sidewalks in terms of enhanced safety. So I don't doubt, I would expect them to be willing to share to at least that extent. But the rest of it is not their responsibility.
Sort of reposition you back onto the precinct plan, and I know some of these issues are an outcome from the precinct plan, but speak if you could more to the precinct.
This is a direct result of the precinct.
Okay.
I mean, if you pass the precinct plan, these are the results we can anticipate.
We understand.
This is what we don't want.
We understand that.
So, condition of support, you have to adopt a more rigorous, this is the next subject, more rigorous noise and vibration attenuation policy. I did notice that there has been attention paid to noise abatement from the railway. For that, I'm very appreciative. At least that's a significant step forward. There's been no consideration of the vibration from the rail, and if it's a heavily loaded rail, as they all are, I mean, it's a main line, that vibration transmission can go several hundred feet out from the roadway or from the rail bed if the soil conditions are right. And it's not hard to find out whether those soil conditions are right. It just takes a line in your policy that says you must check the soil conditions, and if the soil conditions permit vibration transmission that distance, you can build in isolation in the foundation of the houses. And those are houses that are going to be built before the people buy them. I mean, these are not second-sale houses. These are brand-new houses that will be built by a developer that will never have to live in them. The other areas is that there's no noise attenuation policy with regard to the William Comet Parkway. There is and has been provision made for the noise attenuation for the perimeter highway, and any of you that have lived alongside of a high-speed highway can appreciate the need for that noise attenuation. But all it is a 2-meter wall. With the railway, they've got a 3-meter wall sitting on top of a 2.5-meter berm. In other words, they've got 5.5 meters of height preventing noise transmission. And that 2.5-meter berm lifts the elevation of that 3-meter wall up to the point where it is entirely above the rail bed. In our case, in the perimeter highways case, you've got a 2-meter wall that's sitting below the truck bed or the rail road bed, and, well, it's not going to be very effective. So I'm suggesting that be made at least a 3-meter high barrier, and preferably with the bottom elevation at the same elevation as the pavement. And that's both for the WRCP as well as the perimeter highway. Reconfigure the connection of Ridgewood Corridor to WRCP, and this is where it ties in with Victoria's presentation. That last slide that she had was this one. We've calculated the areas that the PR public reserve area takes, and we've calculated the areas that the developer or Qualco has suggested be included as green space. Quite frankly, most of it goes to trails, active transportation, that kind of thing, and as Victoria said, is not the natural areas. We have indicated in red the natural areas that we would like to see preserved. They are a combination of wetlands, forest, and grassland. And we can get into detail as to why we picked those pieces of property, but it's all related to the habitat that each provides and the diversity of the wildlife that we have found on those pieces of property. The other thing that we are particularly concerned with here, and I'll use, I don't have a pointer, this yellow line that I'm tracing out with my cursor is of our own concept. It is not of the developers, and we changed the routing of that connection onto the parkway because we do not want to bisect that piece of forest. We do not want to interrupt the wetlands that are all along the periphery of it, and we want the connection onto Wilkes to be in an area which is less environmentally damaging than the orientation or configuration that has been adopted in the precinct plan. I don't see any difference in cost. I see a substantial difference in the benefit to the people of Charleswood. Those are are my suggestions and the reasons for my opposition. All correctable, and hopefully they will be corrected.
Thank you, Alan, so much for coming today. Just want to go back to the documents that were submitted in terms of your waterways. Are those your proposed ones, or are those what?
These are the ones that are proposed by the in the precinct plan. We
okay,
did
so
not change.
These are the ones proposed, or these are the ones you're requesting? Because they're almost identical.
Are the ones. This is the precinct plan, with the only exception being we've added the red on top of it, and we have added that rerouting of the connection between the Ridgewood corridor and the WRCP.
Okay, and in your discussions with Landmark Planning or the developer, had you suggested these in the past, and what was the result?
The reorientation or reconfiguration of the connection between the corridor and the WRCP, we have suggested that twice. Each time it's been rejected without a great deal of discussion. The green space, yes, we have put that forward as well. Not in quite as definitive terms as this, but very close. The total green space that we are after comes up to 25%. I should add that, and it's probably not deliberately deceptive, but it is deceptive nonetheless. The green space that is shown in the precinct plan does not equate to the green space that they say they're going to provide. The green space that they are offering is 10%. What is shown here is 12.5% offered by the precinct plan, and the red over and above that adds the other 12.5%.
Can we get a copy of this presentation as well?
Yes, I have given a digital copy to
We just have the two pager.
Danielle.
I'd like this page in particular.
She has it, I can send it to you directly if you wish.
You have it? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts.
Wesley Chamberlain. We're going to have to set a separate queue for laptops.
I do have a handout if so you guys want a piece. Basically, go through all my sources for all the numbers that I bring out. It tells you where I got all my numbers from for each slide.
Great. Let's roll. Oop. Okay.
Got it. Perfect. My name is Wes Chamberlain. I'm here to talk about the facts behind the William R. Clement Parkway extension, or the proposed extension, and how it is in the context of the precinct plan itself. To give you a bit of background, I'm a mechanical engineer. My family's been in Charleswood since 1976. I recently purchased the home from my mom, and we have renovated, and we've kept our family in Charleswood because of the green spaces, because of the quality of life. If you look at this picture here, this is my backyard. If you look beyond the fence line, that's the area for the Clement Parkway extension. So although this is literally in my backyard, this is not a cliche, not in my backyard presentation. I went to look at the facts. What does this give to the city of Winnipeg? What does this give to the existing Charleswood residents? Is it warranted? I found that's not the case. My goal is to prove that to you today. I won't harp on this too much. We had the Transportation Master Plan that was approved. It was brought forward November 16th, 2011, 4 months after it was basically altered to expedite the WRCP extension. That expedite was large part or in a complete part due to the precinct plan requirements. For that to be moved forward, there must be reasons to move it forward. Let's talk about those reasons. There's been claims of improved traffic conditions, both for the existing traffic and both for the increase in the Ridgewood South Development Precinct. The other benefit they've talked about is the financial benefit to the city. There'll be tax revenues. That's a big plus. We're talking about flatlining revenues and things like that. I want to go into these two points in greater detail, and let's discuss on how these come through. So for transportation, right now the current precinct plan shows that the parkway extension terminates at the collectors. It does not connect to Wilkes as the precinct plan shows today. You can see with the dotted lines underneath, that's future development. If we only connect it there today, there is no benefit to existing residents. It would not alleviate any residential traffic, which has been some of the quotes in the papers. The next issue is, how is it going to connect to the arterials? It's unknown right now. These arterials have to go through sub-areas 3, 4, and 5. They are noted within the precinct plan as the last to be developed. Len also indicated that, you know, there's some land issues and they want to reserve things. They need years to basically provision the funds for that. These roads may go through those lands. So with the multiple landowners that Mr. Taves talked about, who's responsible for this infrastructure? Who's paying for this? When is this being done? So how does this affect the WRCP? The last point for the WRCP is, let's connect to Wilkes. It seems like the logical progression, and it needs to get done. But what is the actual ramifications from that connection? I found two studies done, one from Landmark and Stantec. That was September 6th, one from the city of Winnipeg. So I went through both of their numbers and actually looked at the volume. So people tonight have talked about the concerns of traffic on Wilkes, the emotional side of it. I'll show you the numbers behind it. So if I look at Landmark study, they say there's an increase of 5349 for that's daily volumes of traffic on Wilkes. Their original publishing said 11,000 vehicles a day. Their latest revision shows 21,000 vehicles. So we're now at 26,000 based on the Landmark Stantec study. If I look at the City of Winnipeg study that was done, they say 123 to 127% from existing, not talking about the increase from the Ridgewood South precinct plan. You do the math on that, you come up with about 32,000 vehicles a day. Let's split it down the middle and call it 30,000 vehicles. Oh, or get to the right slide. So 30,000 vehicles a day between those two studies is roughly what we expect on Wilkes. Based on the MMM study, it's commonly decided that 10 to 12,000 is where arterials should be twinned. So when we talk about extending the WRCP onto Wilkes, in its current alignment, it is over capacity by roughly three times. So any discussion of extending the WRCP without Wilkes being done beforehand doesn't make any sense. Another complication to the matter is the same MMM study that looked at doing the Shaftesbury widening, they actually went, and I've put it in square there, is therefore recommended that Wilkes Avenue not be widened along its existing alignment. So we talk about putting the WRCP onto Wilkes, we don't know where Wilkes is. We don't know where Wilkes is going to be. So that's a big factor in how are we going to actually mitigate the traffic issues. So to sum up from the transportation, there's no benefit to the existing residents. The arterial development's unknown. We don't know what the connection will be. The location of Wilkes is unknown. And if we connect now, it'll be the Wilkes will be over capacity, completely unsafe. So if we look at our original benefit of moving the WRCP forward, it doesn't meet the original objective. There's no value added. Let's talk about the second point. Let's talk about the financial benefit. So our current City of Winnipeg infrastructure deficit is $7 billion. The WRCP is slated to cost $60 million. Where the $60 million comes from, I don't know. I haven't seen any sketches. I've never seen any proposals. I would love to see them. I just haven't seen them to date. So we don't know what the configuration looks like, intersections, active transportation, noise abatement, is it a truck route, on and on. I won't go on with that. So keep in mind $60 million. For the precinct plan, so Qualico commissioned Deloitte to do a cost-benefit analysis, which is part of the precinct plan process. They have to go through and find out what is the cost-benefit to the City of Winnipeg. Running their numbers, their net present value is $54 million. So for net present value, so everyone knows, they take the expected lifetime surplus of revenue from the precinct and they back it up to today. They say that we'll make, as a city, $54 million. My math says that we are now a net loss of $6 million. So to say that there's a financial benefit to the city for this precinct, I think is unfounded. Again, does not meet the original objective. There's no value added. I think it's really important to point here at the precinct plan. They've included the WRCP to show the transportation is feasible. They have excluded it to show that the cost-benefit is feasible. It has to be consistent across the entire precinct plan for it to be credible or valid. And I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind. So to conclude, I talked at the beginning of the presentation that I want to show you guys the facts. I want to show you where the numbers are and why I don't believe that this is giving the City of Winnipeg or the Charleswood residents any benefit. So I'll go through these points. It is irresponsible and irrational to approve a plan that relies on a conceptual roadway that we cannot afford, so we're not so fiscally irresponsible. It may be a dead end. We don't know how to connect to Wilkes. We don't know how to connect to the collectors. The multiple landowners are going to have to come to the table and figure out how they're going to pay for that. Net economic loss, $6 million. I want you to vote no today. I openly oppose the precinct plan. The precinct plan is only feasible with a roadway that has no improvement to traffic and no financial benefit. So the WRCP is not feasible, therefore neither is the precinct plan. To close, the Winnipeg Free Press broached the subject of, I'll quote, the deep mistrust that mars the relationship between developers, politicians, and residents. So the next sentence, one of our planners was quoted as, the suspicion. That's something I encountered right away. We need to build relationships and change that. Approving this plan will foster that suspicion and further divide the residents from the elected officials. The opportunity to build relationships is now. The time to build those relationships is now. Please oppose the plan. Thank you.
Order. Any questions? Thank you. All right, thank you.
Questions?
None, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Schuster.
I was asked to bring copies, of which I have.
Thank you.
And in keeping with the proponents, I've made some last-minute changes. There's a typo that I noticed. Members of Assiniboine Community Committee, my name is Harold Schuster. I am a resident of Charleswood, and I come before you today encouraging you to say no to Ridgewood South. You are being tasked with the responsibility to hear input on the Ridgewood South Precinct Plan and make a recommendation to City Council. As part of the democratic process, this input should play a critically important part in your deliberations over the value of this major new housing development on the western edges of our city. It is important that these hearings take place as they provide an open forum for citizens and corporate interests to share their views and for you as the area councillors to gauge support or disapproval for this project as it relates to the future growth and development of our city. I am here to say no to Ridgewood, not just because it will put further strain on the existing streets until new collector roads are built. I am here to say no to Ridgewood, not just because it will require the extension of the William R. Clement Parkway, and nobody knows who will come up with the estimated $60 million to pay for it. I'm here to say no to Ridgewood, not just because there are much needed upgrades to Wilkes Avenue to deal with the estimated 4,000 more cars that will be on the street every day once Ridgewood is completed, and no plan for those upgrades to happen. I'm here to say no to Ridgewood, not just because there is a great deal of uncertainty over who will pay for the road and drainage upgrades needed to accommodate the increased traffic flows. I'm here to say no to Ridgewood, not just because this development will destroy the unique natural habitats and wildlife found in this area that exists nowhere else in the city. I'm here to say no to Ridgewood because even if there were answers to all the concerns raised today, and even if this was the most innovative, creative, complete community, I would say no to Ridgewood because we do not need and we cannot afford further suburban expansion. You as councillors should know better than us that the city is literally crumbling beneath our feet. Our streets are full of potholes, public institutions are closing, bridges are in need of replacement, water mains are bursting on a regular basis. With all the critical issues facing our city, as our elected leaders, I would be very surprised if any of your sleepless nights worrying over the future of our city was related to finding a developer willing to build 4,000 new homes in your ward. Planning, for as long as I've been engaged in civic politics or civic issues, has been dictated by developers. To quote my former political science instructor, Chris Leo, Planning is, in reality, a cleanup operation designed to legitimize decisions that are driven primarily by developers and the priority and prioritize the interests of those developers and of the residents of their new neighborhoods over the interests of the city as a whole. Developers have, for reasons beyond my comprehension, City Hall in the palm of their hands. Every new development makes money for them, and every new development sends the city deeper into the red. The most recent headline had us heading for a $13 million deficit this year, and Ridgewood will be no different. A big part of why developments make money for developers at the expense of the rest of us is the way the city values the land. The Department of Planning, Property and Development uses a very simplistic calculator when a new development is proposed. Costs to the city are calculated in three categories: the building or development of roads, parks, and underground municipal services. These costs are totaled and charged to the developer. The developer then is deemed to have covered all the costs of the development. Not included in the calculation are the provisions of fire, police, and paramedic response times comparable to those that more densely populated areas of the city enjoy. Not included are the costs of street cleaning, snow removal, grass cutting, insect control. Not included are the costs of public transit, community centers, library services, and everything else that would constitute a complete community. The city needs to begin using a more complete set of criteria to determine the cost of any new lands poised for development. The city needs to stop subsidizing suburban development while it ignores its inner core, allowing it and its inhabitants to slip into deeper and deeper disrepair. Once the city starts using a more accurate and inclusive method of determining the cost of new suburban land developments, inner city and infill housing developments and projects will become much more attractive and affordable. That is where the city needs to be focusing its development efforts. When talking to my son about this, he thought Ridgewood was a good idea, as he was lamenting the fact that Winnipeg, while trying, was not really a big city yet. His thinking of big was equated with geographical size. We can be a big city through big ideas and forward thinking, and not through an ever-increasing suburban footprint. In closing, I offer another quote from Chris Leo. In short, the development of new neighborhoods, Plan Winnipeg 2020 vision to the contrary, has been guided not by the theoretical invocation of good planning practice, but by the demands of different developers to develop on their own lands, in their own time and at their own pace. The city has followed their lead obediently, constructing the infrastructure necessary to give them whatever they have asked, largely regardless of cost. The appearance of planning is constructed retrospectively to conceal a reality that looks orderly but lacks the coherence needed to permit the development of a viable and affordable network of services and a system of public transportation. I am hoping that you will show the much needed and for far too long missing courage and conviction to take back the planning and development agenda from developers and place it where it rightly belongs, in the control of City Hall under the leadership and direction of the city's planning department. And given that you received this extensive document less than 2 hours before you're being asked to make recommendations, I cannot stress enough that we need to be developing our city on our own timelines and on our own pace. You can start that process by saying no to Ridgewood. Thank you.
Question, Councillor Havixberg.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
When our Winnipeg was passed in 2011, unanimously by council, there was a process called Speak Up Winnipeg. Did you participate in that?
I did.
And what did you offer in terms of Precinct Q, which was in there? Q, M, N, O, and P, I guess. All of them are in there.
To be honest, I don't recall exactly. I'm not sure if which of the meetings I attended. I think I probably attended more that would have looked at inner city development and maybe poverty alleviation, as I wasn't that familiar at that point with...
So did you stand up in opposition to those ones, I guess, is my question, and this precinct in particular?
To be honest, I don't recall.
Okay. And how long have you lived in Charleswood?
I've lived in Charleswood for about 6 years.
Always at this address, then?
Yes.
So my question is, do you not think that others deserve the opportunity to live in Charleswood as well?
Absolutely. There is what? Yes.
Okay, and you've only lived there six years.
That's correct.
And your house was built approximately when?
I think it's about 30 years old.
Yeah. So at some point, some subdivision had to be approved for that to happen. Would you not agree?
Okay.
That's a yes or no kind of a question.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, no, I think that when it was built, Charleswood was its own city. So it developed under its own own time frame, on its own basis, within the parameters under which its local municipal government allowed.
So why do you think that nobody else should come and live in Charleswood?
I'm not saying that nobody else should come and live in Charleswood. I'm just saying that for people, that people need to wait to move into Charleswood when other people leave. I will be moving out of Charleswood at some point because I'm going to want to live closer to downtown. And that's when people can move into Charleswood. I don't think that we should be expanding our city geographically simply because people might want to live in the suburbs. People will need to wait for those opportunities because we simply can't afford to continually increase our suburban or our geographical footprint simply because people want suburban living. I think more and more people are looking for inner city living and housing, which is why we have all of these condo developments along Riverfront. People want to live downtown. We need, as a city, to be forcing more people to be living downtown. We can't afford to be growing and growing ever more. We need to shrink our size, not expand it.
Okay, I have
one
more
question. Done? Yeah.
Thanks. Professor Leo would be proud.
If I could just add for the record, Donovan, in his presentation, implied that those who were opposed to this development were opposed to change. I'm opposed to this plan not because I'm opposed to change. I welcome change. I'm opposed to this plan because it is a bad plan.
Thank you. Ken Howell? Are you with us, Ken? Thank you. Walter Zernichich? Judy Taylor, Angela Reeves, that's a few.
I'll try to be brief. My name is Ken Howell. I'll try to take as little time as possible as I can because I'd like to have dinner before breakfast. So I'd like to, before I start my presentation, I'd just like to comment that Mr. Tay's presentation, while very factual, very colorful, and very informative, I'm disappointed that the material in presenting the background and the steps that were undertaken to get to this stage were very full and presented to us, but yet when it came time to talk about the issues and the risks, we were really quick with the next slide page. So a little concerned that we focused a lot about historical and not about the issues that are presenting us today.
So, you know, when the applicant does come up, we'll be asking some of the questions, so they will be responding to some of the issues that you and some of the other
Excellent.
Citizens
Excellent. Thank you
raised.
Very much.
We'll ensure that they do answer some questions.
So I am a resident of Charleswood. I've been here for 10 years now. I'll speak a little bit to my journey. I moved to Winnipeg from another province that I won't say where from because you'll just hear banjo music. And I wasn't originally looking to live in Charleswood. I wanted to live in another area. I looked and looked, dozens and dozens of houses, no luck. I looked at one house. And when I found that house, I knew I was home. All right, so let's get to business. So this precinct plan is really has been lots of talk about tactical issues, factual issues, and a lot of emotional, as I guess you just saw. The precinct plan really is the basis for the future of development within this area. And my concern is within the strategic area of this document that is the basis of the vision and the goals of this area. In section 4.1 of the plan, it talks about that the creation of new neighborhoods as well as the completion of existing neighborhoods is important. What I'm concerned about is I don't think this plan addresses the existing neighborhoods. The neighborhood is called Ridgewood South, but there's four areas that are north of Ridgewood South that have been added in based on planner's direction. So a little bit of information. Donovan presented that within the vision, the Ridgewood South precinct will include the creation of new neighborhoods as well as the completion of existing neighborhoods. That's great. It's very, very relevant. And that the goals of the precinct queue are, I won't go through them, but I'll really summarize them. New communities will be established. New communities will be developed. New communities will increase. New communities will be developed. Develop new communities. The development of new communities. Nowhere in here does it talk about the existing communities that are surrounded by 75% population. And I really think there's a discrepancy between the plans of the new communities with the existing communities that are in place today. I am with Donovan where he is. We need to wear both hats and look at future of the development of the new areas as well as the existing. So I applaud the goals and the directions for the new communities, but I'm concerned about the lack of direction in the plans for the existing environments. We've heard lots of talk today about existing impacts on transportation. City bylaws dictate that all development needs to reflect the local heritage and enhance what makes the area unique, as well as tie into the Charleswood community. My first week here in Winnipeg, I walked out my door, and I had to shoo deer away. That week, I had a surprise visit from the zoo. A pair of peacocks came and stayed in my yard for the afternoon. I won't get that in St. Vital. I won't get that in downtown. I won't get that in Transcona. So what I'd like to request is that this committee actually reject the precinct plan as it's currently written, as it doesn't provide direction for the existing neighborhoods, as indicated within the vision and the goals. They need to be rewritten to address the existing neighborhoods within that area. Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Councillor Havoc.
Are there some specific changes you would recommend opposed to rejecting it outright? I mean, you have in your comments here, does not provide direction for existing neighborhoods. What direction for existing neighborhoods would you like to see specifically?
I think within, so for example, one of the items that were deferred, we're looking, we understand that there's been, based on this approval of this plan, there has already been a variance request that's been put forward towards a plan that hasn't even been addressed.
Yeah, okay, let's exclude that. There's been three applications filed. Nothing happens until we get to some kind of a workable document, if at all, tonight or at some point in the future. So put those applications aside. Nothing happens with them until a plan is approved. Procedurally. So what specifically is it missing for you?
So from my understanding of the documentation, existing stable environments are required to have 3 to 5 lots per acre. New lots are required to have a minimum of 4. So what I understand is that the new environments will generally have a smaller environment. Now, for the new areas south of the Hart Trail, there are generally, I apologize for anybody who lives south of Hart, generally there is not a lot of houses in that area, so some will argue with me. The minimum 4 lots per acre, I guess makes sense. For those above the Hart Trail that have the larger lots, and on my street, I'm a smaller lot, and I'm 55 by 180, I think. So I'm a fairly larger than average lot, but I'm still small for my area. I'd like our area, the existing areas, to reflect the environment and the property value and the property sizes as currently in place today. I'm sorry? I live north of Hart.
No, that's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
How is Walter here? Okay, there you go. What's your name, sir?
Richard Blaine.
Oh, I called you a long time ago. Okay, you're on deck.
Good to go.
You have 5.
Okay, so thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Walter Cherney. I'm a resident of Charleswood, or have been a resident of Charleswood for 30 years, and a resident of Vanscoy Road for 25. I'm here to voice my opposition to the Ridgewood South Precinct Plan as currently written. While I believe there's a number of issues with the precinct plan, the one issue that I'll be talking to is that the precinct plan does not adequately address existing communities north of Ridgewood. While the precinct plan section 4.1 vision, and this is a bit of a repeat, speaks to the creation of new communities and the completion of existing communities, section 4.2 goals only speaks to new communities. Other City of Winnipeg development plans, such as the complete communities, classify those areas south of Ridgewood as new communities, classify areas north of Ridgewood as existing communities, and provide specific land use and development direction for those existing communities. I believe the precinct plan does not provide adequate direction on the development of those existing communities north of Ridgewood. My belief that it does not provide adequate direction is as a result of recently released sub-area plans for existing communities north of Ridgewood that are now showing divergence from what direction is provided in the precinct plan, specifically section 6125, and from other City of Winnipeg bylaws, 200/2006, part 5, section 138. Both those sections refer to requirements for new lots adjoining existing lots with respect to lot width and area. And I believe the divergence is a result of the inadequacy of the existing existing precinct plan in terms of distinguishing existing communities from new communities. In cases as well where the precinct plan does provide some direction, and again, precinct plan section 6125 is a should statement, whereas bylaw 200/2006 part 5 is a must or mandatory statement. So, in conclusion, I request that this committee reject the precinct plan as currently written. I believe a lot of work has gone into it. I believe there's a lot of good information in there, but I still believe there's work to be done. And I further request that the committee direct that the project plan be modified to identify areas 8, 9, 10, and 11 as existing communities, as well to change section 6125 from a should statement to a shall statement in order to synchronize it with the existing City of Winnipeg bylaws.
Councillor Havlicek? No, very clear. Thank you, sir. We appreciate your input. Sir, just state your name for us.
Thank you. My name is Richard Wind. I live at 579 Laxdal Road, and I've lived there for 27 years. I wasn't going to speak, but something Mr. Taze said came to my attention, and I think I'm quoting or paraphrasing him accurately. This development will have no adverse impact to existing infrastructure. I've heard nothing in his presentation that would assure me that that's not the case. He referenced closing Elmhurst. I live on Laxdal. Would the closing of Elmhurst happen before the Clement Parkway is extended or after? I don't know. If they closed Elmhurst, would that impact my neighbor who referenced increased traffic on Community Road? Secondly, I have no idea, very little idea, what exactly is involved in Area 7. I've attended all the meetings. It references multifamily and commercial. I don't know what kind of commercial. I don't know what kind of multifamily. Are we talking about high rises? If we close off Elmhurst, does that mean traffic is traveling down Laxdal to get to Grant? Will there be access to Wilkes off the parkway? When is that happening? I don't think anything should be happening until you get the infrastructure in place. I'm not entirely opposed to this necessarily, but I don't see that this is a plan that encompasses, that addresses the existing community. Secondly, I'm not really a tree hugger. I own two chainsaws. The forestry guy smiled at that. So, but you know, 100 years ago, people made a choice. Some people on council made a very wise choice, and they created Assiniboine Park. I don't want to get melodramatic, but you've got an opportunity here to save or at least seriously mitigate a very beautiful natural area. And I am not a tree hugger. But I pedal my bike down there, and people from other areas of the city come and pedal their bikes down there with me. And it is a very beautiful area. And I think it is something that, you know, like Assiniboine Park, 100 years from now, could be something that would be a real legacy that you could leave the citizens. And again, I'm not saying necessarily opposed to the development, but you could really mitigate any damage that's done to it, I think. Thanks for your time.
Okay, Judy Taylor. Danielle, she's got some stuff.
I have some papers to give you, too, if someone wants to grab them.
Okay, and we have Angela following.
The short, two sheets each? Yeah.
Richard Ruoff.
Okay. Good evening. Okay, my name is Judy Taylor, and I've been a resident of Charleswood for the past 22 years. In fact, I've been a resident of Winnipeg for the 22 years. I'm not opposing developing, whether it's developing in Charleswood or anywhere else in City of Winnipeg. What I want to see, though, that it's done right, and done right the first time. So a lot of my references, I went through your Complete Communities document, which is very, very good. And in the Complete Communities Plan, which supports our Winnipeg Direction Strategy, it does state areas of stability are primarily understood as a residential areas where the majority of Winnipegs currently live. Now, I oppose the present precinct plan, which is designating precinct Q as a new community. This precinct is an existing stable community. And that is referenced again in your document here, is when a new development occurs in an area of stability, it should be contextually suitable and enhance and celebrate what makes them unique. To that point, intensification should be accommodated within existing communities in a sensitive manner which recognizes the existing form and the character of the location. So I've referenced that in giving you the page number 2. This reference clearly identifies Area 8, 9, and 10 in the Ridgewood Precinct Plan as an area of existing stability. Any infill areas are surrounded by homes on three sides. So I'll reference again from your community plan. I took the picture of what a new community area is to look like, which is the top picture. There's no houses. There's areas in this precinct have houses probably surrounding three sides. In new communities that supposedly is being referenced for our area, there are no houses. It's a field. It's a field in the middle of nowhere. So again, using your document, the glossary of terms also says existing stable communities are low and medium density residential with some retail. Areas were planned between 1950 and 1990s, and recent communities which are typically stable residential communities. I think it's really important when I've read through the precinct plan and read through your Complete Communities that any precinct plan reference this document and follow it. This is a very important, I didn't realize how important this document is for the City of Winnipeg. I also think that we're not supposed to interpret the document as to suit our needs or suit a plan. Interpreting this document and changing an area of stability to an area of a new community is just, I guess, making it fit. Now, I oppose this plan as written because I am, yes, I live in Charleswood, but I am a citizen of Winnipeg. This plan is very important and has to be perfect before it's passed. It can't be passed with considerations. This plan, once it is passed, and we know eventually this plan will all come together, it's going to be setting a precedence for the rest of precinct plans in the City of Winnipeg. So it's got to be the best, and it's got to meet the needs of all the communities, and especially the community it's reflecting right now. So what I would like is for the Assiniboine Community Committee to reject the precinct plan as it's currently written, as it does not adequately address existing stable communities, which are north of Ridgewood. That's it.
Any comments? Paula has a comment.
Thank you for coming and for sharing your thoughts on this. I'm just going to ask you the same question because last three or four speakers have said reject outright, and I just want to get at, is it the existing communities that you want reflected better in the plan and something more specific? Because when, I notice all of you kind of live in the same area.
Yeah, we take teamed.
Back onto the same land. So.
When I read through the precinct plan initially, I guess I didn't twig on the importance of being called new communities. My interpretation of that was like, what's a new community? It's a new house. It's whatever. But once I started reading your complete communities plan, I realized there's quite a distinction between calling an area a new community and a stable community. And that's what I'm saying is that the plan has to, well, I'll say reworded, rewritten, retweaked, whatever, to reflect the areas that it's supposed to be resembling, which is a stable, existing community. Right. It has to fit.
Okay. I think that's something that we have to take back and discuss with the administration on how we do this. Okay.
That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Angela Reeves.
Okay. Hi. I'll begin by introducing myself today. My name is Angela Reeves, and I graduated from Oak Park High School in 2012, and I'm presently enrolled in environmental science at the University of Manitoba, and I've been a resident of Charleswood my entire life. In my brief time with you today, I'll be expressing why we should not proceed with the Ridgewood development. Being a young adolescent whose future this will affect more than any of you, I feel it's strongly important to hear from someone like myself who would represent your kids, my fellow peers, and our future to come. Where else can you live in Winnipeg, where you have farmers' fields and a forest at the end of your street, where you have herds of deer, various types of birds, and wildlife living right outside your back door? We grew up in those fields and forests. We ran down those streets filled with trees and utilized the beautiful Heart Trail. The SARA Act states the purpose of this act are to prevent wildlife species from being exterminated or becoming extinct, to provide for the recovery of wildlife species that are exterminated, endangered, or threatened as a result of human activity, and to manage species of special concern to prevent them from becoming endangered or threatened, as per record on the Justice Laws website. With there being two species, the northern leopard frog listed as special concern on both Kosciuszko and SARA due to habitat fragmentation and wetland drainage, to list a couple of reasons, and bobolink listed as threatened on Kosciuszko due to habitat loss and fragmentation, and which continues to have a declining rate of reproduction, both these species are currently living amongst the areas proposed to be developed. This would go against the recovery portion of the purpose of SARA, when it would be human activity elevating the risk, causing more pressure for these species to become endangered or extinct. The forest between Hearthstone and Fairmont currently holds three ecosystems: wetland, grassland, and forestry, aiding in biodiversity and a strong chance at a species survival rate. Wetlands also help remove excess nutrients, break down pollutants, being beneficial for humans as well. The government can't make a binding act under Her Majesty and neglect to follow it with all circumstances. Kosciuszko also states it is up to the government to legally protect wildlife species designated by Kosciuszko. Well, the first thing the government can do to aid in recovery is vote no to approving this plan. There are currently 200-year oak forests located among this proposed development. Why destroy natural beauty that benefits us when one large healthy tree can lift up to 400 liters of water from ground and release it into the air, absorb as many as 700 dust particles per liter of air, absorb 75% of CO2 produced by the average car, provide a day's oxygen up to for four people. It also creates homes for abundance of wildlife. It's located next to other ecosystems as well, helping to gain biodiversity. My question to you today is why, when the average family size is getting smaller, we are encouraging household sizes increasing? Why do we insist on more and more developments on vacant land when numerous buildings and strip malls remain vacant throughout Winnipeg? Why not utilize these vacant spaces before continuing the ongoing trend of building on new land? Before we continue to build, why doesn't our government wait and hold off to see what the economy is like 5 to 10 years from now? We already have all these master developments that are currently in process, like Bridgewater, Sage Creek, Waterside Estates, and so on. Do we really need another one that will change life of Charleswood forever? I think not, and that's why I'm asking you to vote no to the proposal. With the province's deficit becoming an ongoing trend, is it really possible to see improvements to streets like Wilkes and the extension of William R. Clement Parkway, which would be key factors in the development, with new roads leading to them, once again causing deforestation and habitat fragmentation? The road connecting the development to the parkway would lead directly behind Springer Gymnastics and adjacent to the Hart Trail. Is this safe or pleasant when right now the Hart Trail has such historical meaning and peacefulness, and with the new road, all you'll be able to hear and see are vehicles and road? Without William L. Clement Parkway extension, the increased amount of traffic on most current roads will double. To improve these roads is considered a local improvement, and to me, I do not see this new development being beneficial to us, the current residents. It would be the residents of Ridgewood that would be increasing the amount of traffic on our current roads. Charleswood is a community. It's family, friends, nature, wildlife, and farming all mixed together. Many of us have called this community lifestyle home for generations. It's a community driven with passion to save what makes it so unique. I'm speaking with you today to stress that you participate and vote no to approving this plan for us as a community, to preserve our lifestyle, to protect our green space, and to protect our wildlife. This land is home to our wildlife, and it shows what the community is all about. Let us unite and vote no to this plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Any questions here? We're going to take one more speaker before we take a break, and it'll be Charles Cognette. Charles, I'm sorry we sort of lost you over there in the corner. I couldn't see you. So. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, and stakeholders of the Charleswood Habitat. Well, okay. The first thing I'd like to talk about, maybe about 8 points here, because I know time is of the essence now. And the purpose of the report which I have submitted to you, I submitted a complete report in addition to an executive summary. I think you've got it in your hand there. Okay. Now, this report that you have there with you is a review of the contents of the proposed Ridgewood Precinct Development Plan, the policies, practices, and technology associated with the following areas, and to provide recommendation as deemed necessary. Firstly, the transportation planning, including evaluation, assessment, design, and siting of transportation facilities, including streets, arterial roads, collector roads, footpaths, and bicycle paths. Drainage plans, such as bio-retention swales and bio-retention ponds, which I'll talk about in a few minutes' time. Traffic engineering, traffic impact analysis and traffic control plan, urban planning, environmental impact assessment. And I'll talk about the existing road conditions within the proposed development boundaries and immediate adjacent areas. Now, there are a few strategies that you can use in this precinct development plan. And the suggested strategies for maintaining a balance between development levels and traffic development levels and traffic flow include the following: preserving and enhancing the quality of the local environment, improving local accessibility, safety, and convenience, a single management strategy. The first strategy should be discussed with the input of stakeholders here. And the second strategy deals with the local road network and should propose ways of improving local accessibility safety, and convenience. All links in the local road network should be considered from a road improvement point of view so that the local environment is protected. The third strategy provides a link between the previous strategies that you may have had in the past or contemplated in the past. And this strategy is considered an integrated package. The potential benefits of these strategies are an integrated approach towards local needs, additional protection for the residential environment. They also enable improvements to be made in local accessibility without encouraging through traffic. And in addition, a basis for dealing with future development. Now, one of the things that you have that must be considered, you probably have considered it before, is the development impact assessment. And as soon as a development is considered and well before substantial capital has been committed, an analysis of the potential impact should begin. The impact assessment process should make use of existing information to determine the potential impacts of the proposed development and to enhance sound land use management at a local level. There are a couple of things that one has to consider, and I think you have considered it before, such as fiscal analysis, environmental impacts, socioeconomic impacts, traffic issues, impact analysis. Now, the next point I'd like to talk about here is the maintenance issues and selection of the bioretention swales that has been proposed. Now, one of the things you have to consider if you are going with the type of bioretention swale that the consultants have recommended to you is the maintenance of such swales. Bioretention swales also have a flood conveyance role that needs to be maintained to ensure adequate flood protection for local properties. And in this regard, a key maintenance requirement is ensuring that the shape of the swale is maintained and that the swale is not subject to erosion or excessive deposition of debris that may impede the passage of stormwater or increase its hydraulic roughness from that assumed. Now, I personally would not recommend, and this is no insult, because as an engineer, we all have different ways of approaching a particular subject matter. So this is not intended to be a criticism, but I personally would prefer that the bioretention swale that has been recommended should not be used for ditches which are the main collection of surface runoff from adjacent ditches. Instead, a modification can be made to this design by placing an engineered soil immediately above the underlying stone, and above this layer, an engineered soil and an overlay of reinforced concrete pavement walkway should be placed. For this modified version, there should be no requirement for backslope, which is one of the things that affect a swale proposed. This type of walkway should be constructed on both sides of existing collector roads by the appropriate department of the city of Winnipeg, and roads within the proposed Ridgewood Precinct Development Plan by the developers. The next thing I want to talk about is the location of retention ponds. It is proposed to locate the retention ponds in residential areas, unless it has changed from the time I wrote this report, or near these areas, and such location can present safety concerns and certain measures of precaution should be taken. While the ponds are normally fairly shallow, they usually average 8 to 10 feet, which is 2 to 3 meters in depth, and should be by no means considered an area for recreation. The banks of retention ponds, typically built with shallow banks, the shallow banks are developed as a safety measure to prevent drowning, but children should still be kept away from the pond and surrounding areas. These areas are also potentially dangerous due to the level of contaminants that accumulate in the stagnant water. The next thing I would like to talk about is the maintenance of these ponds. Now, one has to be extremely careful in your budget that you put aside adequate funds to maintain such ponds, because they sometimes could be a source of danger, as I said before. It is a breeding ground for mosquitoes, and it can be a health hazard if proper maintenance is not taken care of such ponds. And in order to preserve a safe and effective retention pond, it must be properly maintained. Adding a waterfall, for example, on a aerator may help mosquitoes and other pests from breeding excessively around the pond. There are a number of do's and don'ts for such ponds. Is it normal for the water level in the ponds to fluctuate? Yes, particularly during spring and as a result of heavy rain. How does water get into the retention ponds? The water called runoff flows down the street and drain into each catch basin or storm drain, and you might recognize them as grates along the curb of roads. Some catchment basins, the runoff to pipes that drain into retention ponds. Can I use a retention pond for winter recreation activities? No. First, can I use the water from the retention ponds? No. You must not use the water from the ponds for any purpose. Can I use the retention ponds for boating? Yes, but only boats with a motor, example, kayaks, canoes, and pedal boats. How do fish get into the ponds? Fish can get into the ponds by swimming upstream from the river when water levels are high. And do you maintain the retention ponds? Yes. So these are some of the do's and don'ts that I'm talking about.
Appreciate that, Mr. Cunha. We'd like you to sort of go to your finishing statement, if you can conclude, please.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. You've done a very extensive report here, and I'm sure a lot of your information is already here. We will get to reading it, and if you could just share with us your final thoughts.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. I agree with you there.
Okay.
Okay.
Wrap it up.
Now we have to think about herbicides and the use of these ponds. You've got to be careful. And a licensed contractor applies chemical herbicides to the water surface of those small or irregularly shaped ponds. The contractor also applies a herbicide to stone hedging along the shoreline on public property to treat grasses and weeds. So those are the things. Now, the other thing I want to talk about
Sir, what I'd like you to do is wrap up your, summarize your presentation, and I'm going to give you one more minute.
Yeah, okay.
1 minute.
The other thing I want to talk about is the evaluation of the need for an arterial road. The primary function for an arterial road is to deliver traffic from collector roads to freeways and between urban centers of the highest level of service possible. As such, many arteries are limited access roads or feature restrictions on private access. Now, when you look at the specifications for an arterial road, they're designed for unimpeded high-speed movement. Traffic signals are used at most intersections
except where the intersecting road is a minor side street. Speed limits are typically between 50 and 80 kilometers an hour, depending on the density of use of the surrounding development. In school zones, speeds may be further reduced. Likewise, in sparsely developed or rural areas, speeds may be increased. Okay, now I had a look at two catchment areas.
We're going to have to move on, sir. I'd just like you to do a complete final statement. We can't get into the minutia of this too much more than you've already.
Yeah.
So if you could just state whether you're in favor of the project, opposed to the project, that's, you know, what we'd like to hear from you at this point.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, just give me 2 minutes, 1 minute again.
One minute again. No, 2 minutes. Okay. 1 minute.
I looked in my report, you have a table two, which talks about catchment A and catchment B. And that table has the name of the road, the origin, destination, and single lane distance in terms of kilometers. Table one has Charleswood Road, the origin, Roblin and Wilkes, Municipal Road, Roblin and Wilkes, Hearthstone Road, Roblin and Wilkes, Shaftesbury, Grant Avenue and Wilkes, and catchment B, Charleswood Road, Roblin again, Hearthstone Road, Roblin and Boulevard, and Portage Avenue. Now, the land use of the area located between the original and destination in Table 3 consists of a mixture of residences and commercial establishments. The straight line distances that you'd seen at the table from. Okay. Now, the question is that you have Portage Avenue is on a T-Rail road.
Sir.
Grant.
You know what? I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to thank you for your presentation. It's no disrespect, but.
Okay. You've got 30 extra people. We did give you, like, everyone is allowed 5 minutes. We're probably giving you about 10 or 12 minutes, sir.
We still have all these to go.
Okay. So we understand.
We understand
just
your presentation. We've got your book.
I indicate to you that based on my report, I do not see the need for an arterial road.
Thank you.
At all.
Okay.
When you read my report, you'll see my rationale for that.
Very good.
Okay?
We appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good evening.
Okay,
we're going to take a 15-minute break. We'll be back at 10:10.